This is tape recording number 7101C23, a lecture given by L. Ron Hubbard on the 23rd of January, 1971. The title of this lecture is The Org Officer and His Resources, Part 2. Copyright 1971 by L. Ron Hubbard in the United Kingdom. Copyright 1978 by L. Ron Hubbard in the USA. All rights reserved. Unauthorized duplication, translation, importation, and distribution is a violation of applicable laws. This tape is 57 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Now, the product officer, as he goes on and stacks up more money, of course, we get more and more resources in terms of money, but we may not have resources in terms of trained personnel. The Sea Org expansion and so on is absolutely staggering. In terms of, I actually think you guys probably believe that we were doing great in 68, and it's all sort of gone downhill, and et cetera, et cetera. It's very, very funny. What's happened is our statistics at this particular time have become divided up. And the statistics are of more individual units and areas. And those statistics, do you see, well, there's this type of thing. The Sea Org now is running three AOs. There are now three SHs. There's a great many more Scientology orgs, and there are a tremendous number of franchises, which are really kind of orgs, do you see? And it's quite amazing. But when you add up these statistics, you find out there's just been a general, you should do it just for fun, there's just been a consistent general expansion, and the stats have been going up, and they're going up and going up, the general stats. But it's because they become compartmented. They're assigned to different units. Nobody adds up all the units. Now, furthermore, if you take Scientology org income, which is lagged as compared to franchise income, so on. The truth of the matter is the franchises were financed by the AOs, by FSMs early on. So they've sort of robbed the orgs of their income, and then the orgs haven't kept up on that FSM line that would have expanded them, and they haven't continued to operate as their own reliable selves. And they've tried to maintain establishments and so forth without actually producing things they should have produced, and it's gone ugly. But when you add it all up, you find out quite amazingly, 1964, 1965, 1966, 1967, 1968, and then you think maybe there was a bong. No, at that time there was a tremendous spread, and it just went right on up the keyboard. It went down, it goes down, it goes up. But you take our stats as this minute compared to the stats of 1967, and they're way up. It's quite amazing. We are expanding. And the place that it shows strain, particularly, is in the Sea Org, because in the Sea Org, we have a limited number of personnel. And they have already, over a period of time, consistently been stretched so thin. You see, we're maintaining three AOs instead of one. We're still making the income of one AO. You see, but now we've got three establishments to man. And it's just got the lines thin. You'll find that to a large degree is a lot of the execs of Washington, D.C., for instance, were yanked out into the smaller orgs and so on. There were all kinds of wild personnel tangles, and there was a lot of weight on Washington. And as a matter of fact, I did not want and did not approve the establishment of these tiny orgs. They could only be of service if they were feeder orgs, and they didn't. They set themselves up as independent organizations. Now they're continuously in trouble, but actually they rob some of the income from Washington. So they're harder to manage because there are more of them, but the aggregate income is comparable. And it's been in my mind several times is to retire some of those places to franchise and force them to feeder service to Washington again. Probably won't do that. We've got a better idea right now. We just force all of them to be big. Well, I thought I would interject that just in passing because I found out the general impression was something was happening with it. No, it isn't. As a matter of fact, the Australian the attacks on Australia and so on were the most ineffective attacks that anybody ever. They passed laws and bans all over the place. The police have given us all back our books, and there's nothing to hell with it. Nobody had anything to do with it. So it sits on the books as a dead statute. It made the staffs timid. It worried them. It upset them. It did this and that and the other thing. But it sure discredited the enemy. So if at any time you don't continue to pile up resources in terms of trained staff members, if you don't continue to pile up resources in terms of space, why, that is what is going to break your back, because you are not on any downtrend at all. You're on an escalating uptrend. I invite you to look at the franchise statistics of the last 3 years, and they almost go double each year. It's not quite that steep, but that's the way it looks. You look at it on a graph, up she went. So don't plan on a level graph. Your resources are your resources, and they are mainly in terms of manpower. How many people have you hatted? How many people have you trained? How many people in the field do you still have the allegiance of? How many people have you patched up? How many ARC breaks have you handled? And how many members do you have in your auditors association and so forth are the only things which will keep you above water, because it's a problem in resources. And the resources are a thing which the org officer has to watch. And if he sees his resources declining, well, we just established a new course out in Wongville as a branch course or something from the org. Oh, there goes the train something, and there goes a train something else, and so on. Has he got them to send out? So he should stockpile all the resources he can. Money, auditors, books. He should be greedy. Now, the product officer can go on turning out products, but when somebody doesn't do something with these as resources and get his resources off that line and stack them up and preserve them in terms of field people and so forth, they're willing to help out, and somebody might come on staff, and the auditor was trained, and he wants to know when he can go working for the org. Those are resources. And everybody you hat becomes a resource. So, of course, he wants to overhat, always. A person had it for 3 posts, but a person had it for 1 post. He's a better resource. So your org officer has the duty of piling up resources. Now, his sudden demands made on him a piece of cake. He's way ahead of it. Oh, need to buy a new building? Okay. How much it cost? All right. Okay. We'll look for one. Yeah. Good. Only $1 million? All right. Poof. All right. Okay. He's in that position. Oh, you need $200? Okay. You see how the org officer gets behind? Because his resources are limited. So therefore, he gets ahead by increasing and hoarding his resources. See how it's done? Now, you don't want a miser on the post who holds the resources to his chest and never will let them go. But you want a provident sort of housewife who has a basement full of next year's canned good rations and doesn't have to go screaming down to the Safeway to buy a cup of sugar every time that there is a guest for dinner. And if you look this over from a standpoint of expanding by resources, you will see that you cannot expand unless you have stockpiled resources or tried to. Now, you should always try to stockpile resources, and that's how the org officer keeps ahead of the game. How many replacement aides do we have in the Flag Bureau already trained who can be spared on their posts at this particular moment? And that tells you exactly what the resources are. That is poverty, boy. That is right down to the bottom of that old barrel. I'm sure there must be a half a herring left in this herring barrel someplace. Somebody get a flashlight. Do you see where she errs? So now the org officer system should increase resources. So when he's called on for one, he gets two. And yes, you will eventually wind up, and orgs which I manage, by the way, generally do wind up, there's an awful lot of old stuff out there that nobody's ever used in the garage. And it probably never will be used now. Somebody said, wasn't that a terrible waste? No, no, no. That was just providence extended a little too far. They also don't turn around immediately and look at the rest of the resources that were used. And they're all over the place in full use. And they also don't look around at the bank accounts because those periods were also attended by very high bank account reserves that went pouring in. And the staffs also were well paid at that time. So these are the criteria by which an org officer operates. Now he has to know what a resource is. Resources are things like space, furniture, equipment, and the establishment of the factors of the org. Any of those can be resources. But the final valuable products, what happens to the final valuable products after their final valuable product? So the org officer sort of steps in after the product officer. And that's how he gets ahead of him. So the product officer, you see, he's turned out a lot of his final valuable products, and they're sitting all over the place. And at this moment, the org officer says, let's get some of these. Got it. Open up an org officer's desk, and there's no list of potential staff members for posts and so forth. He's in poverty. Now, naturally, an org officer tries to keep everything on an org board and tries to keep it all straight and tries to keep it this way and tries to keep it that way, right up to the point when the org board gets in his road. And at that moment, why, he can make do in some fashion or another and get some approved change so that it can be officialized. That's approval sort of after the fact. Otherwise, as you expand, you won't be able to fill in the weak points. So the org board is saying, well, you can't have an organization without weak points if there's a point missing on the org board that you need to have filled. Do you follow? That's a contradiction. If you have a strong organization which won't blow up at the joints, it's of course going to get an expanding org board. Fortunately, the org board, 1967 org board, expands from about two or three people, one person can operate on it actually, to about 100,000. It's inherent expansion is that great, so you really don't have to vary the pattern of the org board much. That was the reason it was planned. Now, the close work with the HCO we've covered, and the org officer moves very fast and should always move faster than the product officer. Yes. The product officer going 100 miles an hour, the org officer will be lost if he doesn't travel at 125. If he only travels at 125, he will be overtaken sooner or later. Because he has to stop by the wayside every once in a while to pick up the bodies and fat them together. The best laid plans of org officers aft gang agley. Yes, we will be able to take care of it. Bessie Ann just ran off with another man. Now, in urgent peak periods, the org officer might be required to understudy and be at the product officer's side. In other words, they work as a team, and at peak periods or at tough points, they must work as a team. They must not be distant from each other. They just work right there, hammer pound, and they will get over one of these things. The org officer should be so familiar with his org's personnel that he would at any time be able to say what each staff member is up to and know what they are doing and in his operations. He, of course, follows the data already supplied by LRH and CBOs and lectures. Now, if you're operating right now at a period of transition, it doesn't change very much. Because of 2 August 1965, HCOPL, which lays down a basic form, that is the one which says what the HES does and what the OES does. That is the first warning of this. And when that was violated, something went astray and orgs became harder to manage. Really, the HES was an org officer and the OES was a product officer. And if you look under the OES, you will find money in Division 3. You will find student auditors in the directors of training, and you will find PCs in the Department of Processing. And then you will find under also distribution, you will find the field and the products which are going out into the field. And up at the beginning of the line, in the first two divisions, you find the HES and so forth, had hatting, forming, and so forth, and also had the executive division, which contained the estate section. So you see, it all works out right, and that's 2 August HCOPL, and it contains the first elements of the system in which we're operating. Now, that was an older system than the 67 org board, but the 67 org board was the preservation of this system, and the 67 org board was very well tried out at St. Hill and was functioning very, very well at St. Hill during its peak periods. The org board was copied with all corrections by Mary Sue in 1967, and I found that when a section is on the wrong part of an org board, you get into trouble at once. A great many of these adjustments were made, so the 1967 7 Division Org Board is a fully tested org board. Unfortunately, the Division 3 of that org board was lost and not published. And the elements of it are still around, and I think we're making some effort to publish this at this time. But Mary Sue wrote it up, and for some reason or other, it just wasn't mimeographed. I can't imagine what happened. The fact that we have developed some new principles in the field of PR and in the distribution division has tended to throw the distribution division a bit out because its product was not anticipated totally at that time, and its product is Scientologists. That is its product. And these Scientologists, of course, have products of sold books, contacted people, and sending people in, you know, interested persons and so on. And they also have, the Guardian's office is carrying on some of that now, and they have all kinds of committees and that sort of thing stretched around the world, and they use these committees and so on. That was really an original distribution division function. So that is in a state of flux at this particular moment, and you could either just use what is on the 9 division public divisions, use that, or use the old distribution division org board with these elements put into it. But I can tell you right now that the PE Foundation is going straight back in the academy, because a PE Foundation requires course supervisors, and it's just a lower level of the same action of a course supervisor, and they have the facilities, tech services, and other things which can be doubled in brass to handle these public actions. Because they're not public actions, it's the same action all over again. You'll see something resembling a staff college or hatting college thrown into the lineup, and that, of course, makes a valuable final product if some of the PE actions also came over to it. At the time I'm speaking to you, this has not been completely released, but it shouldn't give you any trouble at all. Just kick those public courses and so on right over there. Right over there, bingo, into the academy or department of training, and you'll find they're better cared for. When that was that way, by the way, I have reports on when it was that way, the public coming in and running into students who were all enthusiastic and in good shape and had status with them. than the public had already managed to reach and withdraw. So the organizational pattern, with which you're dealing, and the OEC, which you study, are all of a piece, and there's nothing out of line with any of these patterns. You'll occasionally have something has moved to another division and will have the wrong department or divisional designation on it. That could even be corrected up because the functions, in actual fact, haven't much changed. Therefore, there's a tremendous wealth of information and technology which has been developed, all of which is of infinite use to the org officer, and he is rich in terms of theory and technology of organization, and particularly rich with the theory and technology of the org product officer system. An organization is liable to organize forever without producing anything. An organization is liable to try to produce forever without organizing anything. Both of these things are a hideous crime because both of them will crash. You can't continue to produce without organizing it. You can't continue to organize without producing. The general conduct of the org officer is met to the degree that he is familiar with his OEC, he's familiar with the hats, with the expectancies from duties on the various posts, with the resources he has, with what the establishment is particularly composed of, and the product officer, oddly enough, has to know all that better than the org officer. So if you find yourself going too far adrift or too far astray, either as a product officer or an org officer, you do have a tremendous amount of material which can be reviewed. And that material is not out of line. And its theories are definitely not out of line. There's nothing been thrown away in it at all. 1970, it was such a stellar year in the advancement of organizational technology that you would immediately expect it to throw everything away. Well, there's a consistency in it all. It just showed up the importances and how an evolution of it could take place. There's another system on the org product officer system that I must mention in closing, and that system is simply the triangular system. That is where you have a very big organization, and until you had this unit up to where you were clicking off at around $25,000, $30,000 type org, you wouldn't really want this type of system because it's a trifle cumbersome. And that is a triangular system by which the org officer and the product officer are handled by an executive director or commanding officer. Now, what happens there is that the product officer goes straight along with the duties as he has, and then he has the various problems which he is running into, or what he wants, or what he can think of, or what he's trying to get through. And the executive director at that time is the planning officer. And I want to point out to you that the planning officer up to that time on the lineal system of just product officer to org officer, the planning officer is the product officer. He is the planning officer of where the hell are we going? What are we going to do? But the commanding officer, if he was operating with a product officer and an org officer, would be the planning officer, and he's the planning and coordinating officer. That is the way we were running the Flag Bureau. We sort of run a mixture. It's a sort of a half and half. When we take a whole continental area and all the chips are down and that sort of thing is, why then I will step in as commanding officer and planning. And then I will take it up so that we get a plan of overall projects and so on. So it would be actually in a lineal system, it would be the product officer who did that. He would be double-hatted. And where there is no, where the triangular system isn't in, the product officer is always double-hatted as the commanding officer or executive director. In any org that you're running at this particular moment, the lineal system would be the one you were using. But I wish to call to your attention that at the time when you have a product officer and an org officer, and they are working with a commanding officer or executive director, then you also need the rest of the frills. And the rest of the frills are a PR officer, who is a staff officer. He's not down in any division. He's handling the human emotion reaction. You're going to start running into plenty of that. And you've got to have messengers or runners. That becomes a necessity. You'd have to have an executive director's secretary who is shared to some degree in use or is a guidance factor or coordinating factor with the product officer. And you've got quite a little staff. I'll just name them off for you. There's a commanding officer, product officer, org officer, staff PR officer, and messengers, and secretary. The only plurality there is messenger. You can't expect a messenger actually to stay on duty more forever. Anybody tries to put a messenger on duty at 8 o'clock in the morning and take him off at 6 o'clock at night, it's got rocks in his head, because what he's going to do, he's going to spend periods when he doesn't have any messenger, and if he's depending on messengers and so on, why he can do it. But it takes messengers in order to handle anything rapidly enough. Of course, I'm doing, as usual, the Roman running three chariots simultaneously from a center horse with the posts somewhat empty here and there along the lineup. And that's done because of the expansion factor. I suppose someday it will all be improved and it will all be perfect. I don't see it in the foreseeable future. But actually the system which we're running on right now and getting into shape is actually a three-org system, commanding officer of three orgs simultaneously, each one with a pair. That is a product officer and an organizing officer. And with a bounteous number of messengers and with excellent secretarial counselor-type backup. And one of those orgs right now, the ship org, is running solo at this particular moment. That is to say, there's a commanding officer, but not, in essence, a commanding officer who is not backed up by an organizing officer and who at this moment doesn't even have an HCO to establish anything, and I don't know where that's going to go, but I know very well from where I look that at any given instant there will be a small beginning little whistle of steam which gradually goes into a high roar, because something wild will take place unless that is organized up. You can always anticipate something, that an area that isn't organized to some degree will cave in, so you've got to, as an organizing officer, anticipate the fact. You can look at an area and you say, that isn't well enough organized. So therefore, we can only let it go so long before there will be a boom. Now, anytime you try to increase the traffic on a line and you don't increase the organizing functions on the line rapidly enough, or somebody drops the ball in the process of increasing those organizing actions, at that moment you do get a boom. It goes boom. And these are the periods when you've got to have a PR with his coded questions that can be decoded so we can file out what it is so we can get program in the thing while the organizing officer immediately gets a hold of this one and that one and cools off the existing timbers and you get instant padding right away and comment of the HCOAS. Fast, you see, because when it's let go, you can operate on this principle. The longer you let it go, the bigger the boom. And that is a definite operating principle. If you don't believe that, we had it all taped out many, many months ago, what we were going to do, and was for a period there when we did not put an organizational pattern together. And Ken and I were discussing this, and we should really organize this. And we really should take this organizational step. But at that particular time, we're unwilling to take the step due to some of the scarcities of personnel. And I don't know, I think we let it go for about 6 or 7 days, and all of a sudden, boom! And now we had to put it all together in just no time at all. And the other principle is, the longer you neglect it, the more frantically you're going to have to work to salvage it. So foresight really pays off, and that's why the org officer should be way ahead of the product officer. He gets way ahead, I call to your attention again, by picking up the little goodies known as resources. Oh, let me see now. I've got 5 people here who are eligible to be executive directors in a pinch, and I've got 6 people who are triple-hatted. That is to say, they're on a single post, but they've been checked out on all of the hats in their particular area. Isn't that nice? And so on. Now, if we just check them out on all the hats of a couple of more divisions, we possibly will have an org officer here. Ah, that's nice. Goodies. And that is the think which has to be back of that, which puts the org officer ahead of the product officer. In poverty, it is always very easy to starve to death very quickly. And there's something I must mention to you in closing. And that is that there's a make-break point of an org. There's a make-break point. And when an organization drops below a certain volume, a certain income, and a certain personnel level, it is in the break point. And it not only breaks itself, it breaks the people in it. And when you start to getting people trying to blow because of overload and they can't cope with it and that sort of thing, you are definitely, definitely in the break area. When you see a lot of trouble and strain and stress, you're in the break area. Now, the break might not be right where you are. It might be on an extensional line. You may have very overburdened lines without recognizing it, which those lines are extensional outside the organization. Now, that'd be particularly true of a bureau, a flag bureau or a liaison bureau setup is peculiarly liable to stresses which aren't easily locatable inside the org, because the stresses are on its traffic lines. Because where it has any responsibilities for organization of outside areas at all, those stresses show up inside the organization. So everything appears to be okay as far as personnel are concerned and that sort of thing are concerned. But there's internal stress. You're actually in a break area. And that is the time to organize like hell, to promote like mad, and to push up your accumulation of resources at great speed. Whenever you find yourself in that, and every Scientology org in the world, as I speak at this moment, is running below its make point. The make point of a Scientology organization where it's really rolling in cream and so on is probably somewhere in the vicinity of about a 20,000 GI. And if you're not doing that, then you're under strain and very, very heavy strain. And people inside the organization will be under strain. And then you can expect that to dwindle. Whatever you've got will dwindle rather than increase unless you take efforts to actually effectively push it up to the make point. Now, that's nothing very serious. You just make up your mind that we're going to expand this establishment up past the make point. For instance, the accumulated actions of an org like the Los Angeles org at this particular time have not added up to moving itself into any zone of make. It got into the break point, and it's got suddenly grabbed from every direction, and they're putting it back together again. But it is the money made by the individual staff member that determines your make-break point. And it's the old qual staff. And it actually isn't a term of sums of money. You can just lay it aside. I said that that was in that zone, and it is in that zone. You can lay that aside as being, that's only contemporary. Who knows but what tomorrow a barrel load of money will buy a loaf of bread, no more. The make-break point, and so on, is dependent on the amount of money made by the individual staff member. And when it is too high, you will find yourself in a break point. And if it's too low, you'll find yourself in a break point. If you're counting on every individual staff member to pull in $5,500 a week for the organization, you are in too high a band. And there will be a little bit of a crack start showing up along that line because you haven't put enough organization there to make that much money. And if it's too low, you've got too much and too inefficient an organization there, and its bases are too bad if it's down at the lower end of the band. And I can tell you that through 1969, the point of membership in orgs was 16 to 18 pounds per staff member. Let's look that over. That was the international. 16 to 18 pounds per staff member. That wasn't even good pay for a Scientology org member out in the society. He couldn't even support himself at that, much less support the organization. So that organization must have been absolutely product gone. They couldn't have had any product at all. You see what I mean? I'm giving you the actual data. Now, at this time, I instantly became very interested in this network. My ears went up, boom. And this was about a little over a year ago that I saw what this trend was. And I said that they're running organizationally, set so low a level, well, they won't make it. And this is going to crack up somewhere later along the line, so we'll bolster it up. And that was the LRH program, number one programs that you saw going out at that particular time. We're trying to lift that up. Trying to lift that up and hold the fort until we could get a better basis of organization which could bring this about. The why of that was lack of products. They were not making products. And the products they were making were very often too poorly costed. It's just insufficient volume, insufficient quality, and gave you insufficient viability. So that old qual stat will have to be restored. Now, guess what? I don't know what it is at this exact instant, but all the members of the Sea Org, in orgs or not in orgs, at this particular instant, well, this is a figure that taken from some considerable time ago, actually measured up, but it counted all the people in the Sea Org and the gross income of the Sea Org, and it was fabulously high. The highest income per staff member ever made in the Sea Org was $5,500. They were pretty high, heavily under strain, too, but they were doing it. Now, the one, when I surveyed the thing, I said at this instant, not true, when I surveyed this last, and I don't guarantee the absolute accuracy of it and so on, but it was about $520 for every person in the Sea Org, on ships, in orgs, and everything else per Sea Org member, not per staff member. Now, this shows there must be some outness. Now, one of the outnesses is that the Scientology Org does not have sufficiently large packages to sell. It is selling right now hours, which might not be wise. It ought to sell results of some kind or another. It ought to sell packages, and it could rescue itself very easily by selling training, which isn't cut-rate training. Do you know that the Los Angeles organization was selling courses for as little as $35 a piece, actual cash received? They had internal systems of cutatives. So that there was this and that and that consideration, and then just a failure to walk around and collect the money, and so on. And a whole series of their invoices and so on were inspected a few months ago, and it showed that somebody just had rocks in his head, and the org was having a great deal of trouble, and they were selling courses, but having sold the course, they weren't really delivering the course, but what they sold the course for was staggering. Through some kind of internal think are arrangements or peculiarities and so on. I'm not trying to brand one org as being particularly bad. I imagine this was fairly general. You could get a Dianetics course, $35, and so on. Now, how they manage this, I don't know. But there could be, even when you have a package, and even when the package will bring in adequate income to support the org, things can happen internally in the organization so the resource, never the valuable final product, doesn't occur. Well, that is of great interest. Now, one of the reasons why you have sophisticated technology at this particular time is because of the factors which I have been telling you, and also because of the difficulties of managing from a command position. These difficulties are sufficiently great that they were almost impossible. So therefore, we had to have much higher, much more sophisticated technology, and 1970 was the year in which this was very carefully researched and developed. But your make-break part of your organization is improved to the degree that the policy and technology of Scientology is known and employed in the operation of that organization. And this is your first factor that you have to learn. With some horror, just a few minutes before the lecture, I was looking at an otherwise originated policy letter which caved in a corner of one of our finance systems. And now I have got to run this down and round this up and cancel this thing out in a hurry. Now, you occasionally in the field will get an order, rarely, but you'll get them, an order or a policy or a directive or an ed which runs contrary to your production and which makes your production difficult. You would be very remiss in your duties if you did not instantly call this to attention rapidly. There is even a policy by which a destructive order can be halted on the lines. For instance, in the middle of the Dianetics course installation, in the Dianetics course, you have a statement when it was released, do not drop any Scientology action which you have at this particular time. A couple of PLs, not written by me, and some directives and so forth went out. And in the southern United States, you had a belief, or the southwestern United States, there was a belief that if anybody audited Scientology grades on anyone, that he was committing a high crime and would be liable to COMEV. Now, who the hell put that out? I don't know. And yet that was into the teeth of the actual statement made on the HDC tape when it was made, and on the ad which released it, for God's sakes, don't drop any Scientology actions you were doing just because we're giving you Dianetics. So what was the broad spread action? To drop every single Scientology action that was being done. There was even a couple of policy letters originated that got by and got circulated, which canceled those things out, and which messed it up, oh my God. So you must assume that somewhere along your lines you will have somebody who finds it very satisfactory to interrupt forward progress. The writing of the current fashion, the writing of the current fad, does more to destroy your stats than anything else you could do. Yesterday it was true too. And yet man, because of his immediate concern with present time, is continuously throwing away what he has in return for what he hopes to have. And it's a sort of an idiot game. Your resources are policy and HCLBs. Do you know that this moment we have just put on a check sheet, I don't know the date of this Congress, it must be in the early 60s, Ken could tell me, the State of Man Congress? That's it, 59. We have just put it on a check sheet for a very high upper-level course. The State of Man Congress. You haven't any idea of the what you could do with the resources. If you don't know what those resources are, why, of course, they won't be utilized. And you ride off in some high hopes of something. Because all the auditors in the HGC flub a Dianetic session, all of a sudden why some brand new technique is looked upon to solve all the cases in the neighborhood, any one of which would solve if anybody ever read the textbook and taught anybody the textbook on Dianetics in the first place. The highest breakthrough we have at this moment is covered in full in the early 60s. And the only thing that's happened with this breakthrough is we have used it to its totality and have audited it with some new methods of handling a session which make it come off smoothly enough. Only one new principle has been developed. But there are two new methods of auditing to make it smoother. But the whole theory of it is back there in the early 60s. Now that's amazing, isn't it? Now you're basically in the business of knowledge. That's the one thing that you're putting out, and it's knowledge of self. So whatever other valuable final product you have is knowledge. And you would be absolutely startled. But a fellow who is a class 10 in training at this moment got stopped by me the other day and given, when he was asking me questions about why something was happening, about a low TA, was told very directly and very forcefully that he damn well better go back and read the original thesis. He had never understood what happened in this session. I've had CSs who couldn't audit because they did not know the basic books. Therefore, you basically are purveying knowledge. So how do you expect to succeed without your mimeophiles? How do you expect to succeed without your bookstore absolutely crammed to the gunnels? How do you expect to succeed without every tape in that place and packages for sale that you possibly can lay your hands on? Because you're basically purveying knowledge. When we went over a whole series of franchises, we picked out the most successful franchise, and we asked the fellow to write up what made it so successful at the beginning of every meeting that he had with his public on a PE level. He read them a policy letter almost regardless of what it was all about, and he got tremendous, this is a howling success. So now you start comparing this with empty mimeograph files with packs with holes in them, and you will see what causes your make-break point. You are not spending your primary asset, which is knowledge. And we're not dealing with the kind of knowledge which was true in 61 but was not true in 62. There's very little of that on the track, and it was all corrected out not too long ago. There are tapes beyond belief. The libraries and so forth which we have. So your organizing officer must recognize that his first asset that he looks on as goodies is all that space taken up there with mimeophiles. All that space taken up there with packs, and all of that space taken up in the bookstore with basic books and so on. There's resources, and that's where his resources begin. Resources don't even begin with people. The people are all over the place, but they're worth nothing to anybody. Unless the knowledge is put out. And that is the basic business you're in. And if an org officer mistakes, you look it over. You will agree with me. I'm not just beating drum for anything of the sort. You look it over here, and you'll find out that you got a guy in off the street, and you put him on as a clerk or a course administrator. Realize that you don't look on him as valuable at all until he has been checked out and trained and this, realize that you always automatically and very often very mistakenly make your class 8 the HES because he knows more. Knowledge. So knowledge is what makes the difference. And the organizing officer is basically dealing with knowledgeable people. And so his basic asset and basic resource, of course, is knowledge. And he takes off from there, and then he gets that applied to people. And then the next thing you know, he'll see a 32-story building with Scientology and gold letters across the front of it. It's more the org officer's basic hat than it is the product officer's. Because the product officer doesn't look on a book ordered from someplace or another as a product. He looks on a book sold as a product. But the book ordered is the organizing officer's worry. Now, of course, the product officer could say, look, I can't sell any books until some books have been ordered and delivered. New York is failing at this moment. Everyone walking around in circles wondering, why is New York failing? I happen to know the missing books that they do not have in New York. And they're all of the basic ones. It's not there. They don't have them. We should be at Flag Bureau, and probably will be, and there is an aide at this moment in charge of PubZorg, pushing like screaming crazy to get a lot of basic titles back in print and to get them into print in the U.S. The world has all of a sudden decided not only to be exclusive with its currency, but also with its literature. U.S. books can't come into Europe. European books can't go into the U.S. now. Very difficult. They can get in on individual book sales, but trying to get them in any quantity at all is very terrible, and copyrights go to pieces if you do, and so on, so you're up against this. So what basically is the basic resource? The individual walks in off the street until he has been checked out, until he's been genned in, until he knows the administrative knowledge of the organization and so forth, is not a resource. He is just a resource to the point where he may be worth something, he may not be worth something. Now when he's checked out, so therefore, knowledge is a dominant factor in the success of an org officer. And I want to point this out, not because of any other reason than when it isn't there, he will fail. Time and time and time again, this has been proved over and over and over and over. So in just winding this up, I want to put this with this home. As far as the product officer is concerned, he won't get any place unless he's got some tapes going every night, 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 every night. We don't care whether he's running an HAS course or a PE course and something. He ought to have some tapes going every night, every night, every night, every night. Public tapes, on and on and on. Now, you say, well, sorry, somebody's making a resurgence in an org right now. They've gotten a hold of Ron's Journal 67, and they're just playing it every night. It seems to me like they're making a terrible scarcity of the situation. But then we found out that the only tapes available were a mixed bag. A mixed bag. There were some excerpts from some various Congress. Somebody picks all the cherries off the ice cream, you know. Or just one or two cherries off several ice creams. Ruin several ice creams to have three cherries or something. I don't know what the thing is. But we're trying right now at the Flag Bureau to do everything we can to bust these lines and to get distribution and so on. It might be done faster, it might be done this, it might be done that. We have certain various logistic problems and so on which we have to overcome. We're trying to make this thing available, but unless somebody at the other end of the line in the person of the org officer recognizes clearly that he is dealing with knowledge, and if he hasn't got it in book form, and if he hasn't got it in pack form, and if he can't make up packs out of any mimeograph setup, he's had it. Now, it's true enough, he could probably get a few sets or one set of an OEC course. He could get that set, and you can see now the trying to do something with this bound set. Well, he'd have to have several sets. Well, good, so he could have several sets, but it doesn't give him actually the loose leaf stuff that he needs. Therefore, an ARG officer is whipped at once that he doesn't know what he's doing, and he can't immediately impart directly and immediately gen in and impart to his staff members rapidly. And, of course, he can never back up a product officer. And if you want to know what is wrong with the make-break point of any organization, is Scientology orgs have dropped low on their resources of knowledge that they can hand around and use at this particular moment, and the knowledge which is in practice and which is available to them as a practiced knowledge in the hands of auditors and instructors inside the org and in their neighborhood. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Good night now.